On April 20th of 1999, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold walked into Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado, where they killed 12 students and a teacher and wounded 24 others before taking their own lives. Sue Klebold is Dylan's mother, and since 1999, she has lived with the grief and shame of that day. Her book is now out in paperback. It's called A Mother's Reckoning, Living in the Aftermath of Tragedy, and Sue Klebold joins me now. Thanks for talking with us, Sue.
Thank you.
Well, let's start this conversation about the book. First of all, where do the proceeds for the book go?
Well, the author's share of the profits, all of my share, are going to organizations that work with mental health and suicide prevention. So to date, I have not yet received all of the money from book sales, but all of my money has gone to six organizations. So all the profits are going to, so far, have gone to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the American Association for Suicidology, NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Mental Health America, the Brain and Behavior Research Foundation, and the National Institute of Mental Health.
So, Sue, why is it important to you for people to know that before we even begin our conversation, but for them to know where your proceeds go?
Well, there are really many reasons. The more I learned about what happened at Columbine and what had probably gone on in my son's thoughts, and I believe that what he was experiencing was a deterioration of mental health and that he had problems that were not recognized or identified. And because these problems worsened and all of the circumstances, unfortunately, were aligned, and he did this terrible thing. And I have since come to feel that if he had gotten care and gotten intervention earlier, at least I could have prevented his involvement in the shootings, and I believe this very strongly. And I wanted to try to help other people understand that whether or not someone may be planning a disaster like this, it's very, very rare that someone would participate in a mass shooting. But it's far more common that someone we love may be suffering, may not be sharing that information with us. And I felt that it was important to try to understand mental wellness better. I didn't want anyone to think that I was personally profiting from this terrible, terrible tragedy.
Well, I think it's really important that you've told your story because I think, especially for parents, they have questions. Like, were there warning signs? And I think a lot of times people make a assumption that something in their home life was very off, and that's what might have caused it. I wonder if you can, how do you answer people who might ask you things like that?
Well, first I would say that I myself would have been one of those people who blamed the parents or held the parents accountable. If this had not happened to me, I would have felt that way. I believe that I was a very good parent. I believe that I loved my son deeply and that my love was protective. Certainly in Dylan's life, what he was showing me was that he was a young man who had been in trouble in his junior year, but more than a year had passed since he and his friend Eric had stolen something. He had gotten in trouble at school for scratching the locker and for hacking into the school's computer system. And we, you know, came down and talked to him about this and said, I don't understand this. You need to get back on track. And he did. He showed us that he would get his life on track, and then he had. He'd gone on to apply and be accepted at four colleges. He participated in school plays. He had a job. He was doing all right in school. He had many friends. So the things that we were seeing looked within the range of what was normal. But what we didn't realize were there were some very serious things that were happening. For example, when he had the behavior change in 11th grade, that might have been an indication that there was an onset of some kind of a mental health condition that ultimately helped contribute to his death and, unfortunately, the death of other people.
Grief and losing a son is unfathomable to really understand the reality of it, but let alone what you have gone through. You do tell the story, though, of of how you found out, what that day was like, what you thought might have happened. We don't have to get into complete detail on that, but how did you find out about the shootings?
That particular day started with me going to work, getting up for work very, very early in the morning. It was a spring morning. It was still dark. And normally Dylan would get up and go to a bowling class, and I would wake him. But that morning, as I was getting dressed, I heard that he was up, and it was earlier than he needed to be up. And he ran down the stairs, and I opened my bedroom door, and I called out to him, and the house was pitch black. I couldn't see anything. And I yelled, "Dill?" And all I heard was his voice saying, "Bye." And then he shut the front door and drove off in his car. So the day started with me being concerned, alarmed, wondering what was bothering him. I had no concept at all that this was a life and death situation, that he was in an extreme state at the end of his life. But I thought something obviously was bothering him. And I asked my husband if he would be there when Dylan got home from school, if he would talk to him and find out what was happening. And my husband worked out of our home, and he said he would talk to him. And I went on to school and sort of forgot about that. And then at noon that day, there was a message light on my phone, and it was my husband calling me in a terrible state of mind, telling me there was a shooting going on at school, and that they believed Dylan might be involved, and that he hadn't been in his early class, which is the class I thought he'd gotten up for that morning. And it was all this information, and I just said, "I'm coming home." And on that long drive home, of course, I was thinking of every possible scenario that it could be. I thought it was a prank. I thought Dylan had gotten involved in something that was going to get him into trouble because he'd been on a diversion program. And, any little thing like putting shaving cream on a banister could get a felony on his record. So I was concerned. I was worried. I thought perhaps Dylan was a victim. I didn't know what to think. A thousand things were going through my head.
We are talking with Sue Klebold. The paperback edition of her book, A Mother's Reckoning, Living in the Aftermath of Tragedy, is out, and we're talking more about her son, Dylan. You know, you've mentioned mental illness and that Dylan most likely was suffering from that. You know, when it happened, 1999, is it different now in 2017 how people view mental illness?
I think it is. I think we still have to be very, very careful because we cannot ever assume that mental illness causes violence because a very small percent of people who have some kind of mental illness are violent toward other people. This is the dangerous assumption when we talk about things like this. However, it is believed that most people, and I've heard different estimates, 70 to 90% perhaps, people who die by suicide very often are believed to have a diagnosable mental health condition of some kind. So there's this difficult area of trying to understand what went wrong with Dylan and how his state of mind contributed to his being there that day. Certainly after reading his writings that I saw long after his death and talked with many, many experts, I believe, and the others I've talked to believe, that Dylan was not in his right mind. There was some kind of a health issue, a deterioration, and I believe that played a part in that somehow.
Since your book has come out, I know that many people have said that it has been really helpful to them in terms of their own parenting. What are you hearing?
I've heard that too, but you must understand that as a mother of someone who committed a terrible crime before his death, I try very hard not to hear what people are saying about me or about the book. I'm not on any social media. So my sampling of responses is very limited. But that said, I have gotten some very positive feedback from people who have told me that this has helped them and their parenting has made them listen to their children differently, perceive their parenting role differently, and to try to help those who are struggling and may not, for whatever reason, wish to share that.
You know, so we've talked about Dylan and that he was suffering from mental illness. We haven't talked about what he was like as a kid. What was your son like?
It's funny you should mention that. I was just looking at pictures this morning. He was an adorable child. He was the kind of child that every parent wishes they could have. He was, you know, we called him our golden boy. He was loving, playful, adorable, cute. He looked like Cupid. He looked like one of those Renaissance paintings of a Cupid. He had thick, curly blonde hair, blue eyes, and he was extremely bright. The thing that I adored about Dylan, I think more than anything else, was how it tickled me, how easily he learned. This child was doing equations with number magnets on the refrigerator when he was, you know, a very early three-year-old, and, you know, still wearing a diaper at night. I mean, he was just so interested in numbers and letters and reading. He was really, from a very young age, very scholarly. He wanted to learn things. He could read books like hardcover books, like Stuart Little or Charlotte's Web, silently to himself. And when he was in kindergarten, and he entered kindergarten a year older, so a year ahead of everyone else, so he was only 4 years old when he could read like that. So he was a very extremely bright child, but he was a very normal child in terms of his social interactions. My family albums are filled with pictures of him doing what healthy little boys do. He, you know, was in Cub Scouts, he built snowmen, he carved pumpkins. I mean, this is what our family album looks like.
So you've been doing research and learning more about mental illness since the time of the Columbine shootings. I'm sure the loss of life that happened that day is always something that you think about, and the parents of those that lost kids. How do you handle that? How do you grapple with that?
You know, I have to take that on a day-by-day basis, because I don't believe there has ever been one day, or probably not even a couple of hours, where I don't think about that and think about the other families. And it's just something, if I see a parent and a child somewhere walking through a grocery aisle or, you know, in a line somewhere, I always think that my son took that beloved child away from the parents. And it's a terribly hard thing to live with. And I always feel a need somehow to apologize for what Dylan did and to make some kind of gesture to, you know, to offer my love, support, my regrets. And, you know, it's something that I don't think I will never stop thinking about the other families and knowing, having lost my child, what a horrible experience it is to lose a child.
That is Sue Klebold. The book is A Mother's Reckoning, Living in the Aftermath of Tragedy. Is there anything I might have missed or anything you want to add, Sue?
There is one thing that I want to make clear to people, that of things that I learned in all this. And one of the things I learned is that love is not enough. I think we have this idea that if we love our children enough, they will feel close enough to us to share what they are thinking and feeling. And if someone's mental health is deteriorating, very often they will have what they perceive of the need to keep it hidden, to not talk about it. And I think one of the things I certainly regret the most is that I wasn't, as a parent, able to ask questions better or listen better, to know what to say, to listen without judgment, to not try to fix things. And I urge people to try to educate themselves, for example, to take a class in mental health first aid. I also urge people to remember that any time, day or night, if someone we love is having a crisis or an emotional distress period, to call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK.